I'm Mark Vinette, and this is The Story of America. In this episode, we reconnoiter how early Portuguese sailors to the coasts of the continent eventually led to the significant presence of Portuguese Americans. Join me as we explore Portugal's unique connections to the continent. As you know, the nation of Portugal and Europe's Iberian Peninsula featured prominently in recent episodes. My fondness, expressed in a previous episode, for fado music was applauded by many in my audience around the world, including Portuguese Americans. The Portuguese were the first European nation to systematically encourage maritime commerce by exploring foreign shores under the sponsorship of Prince Henry the Navigator, who encouraged the development of a new, much lighter ship, the caravel, which would sail farther and faster, and above all, was highly maneuverable and could sail into the wind. To ensure their monopoly on trade, Europeans, beginning with the Portuguese, attempted to install a Mediterranean system of trade which used military might and intimidation to divert commerce through ports they controlled. Long-standing nautical myths warned of oceanic monsters or sailing off the edge of the world, but Prince Henry's navigation challenged such beliefs by probing southeastward along the African coast to see whether it was possible to reach the lucrative markets of the Indies by sea. A crucial breakthrough occurred in 1488 when Portugal rounded the southern tip of Africa, then sailed east, establishing that the Indian Ocean was accessible from the Atlantic, proving false the view that had existed since antiquity that the Indian Ocean was landlocked. Portugal's neighboring fellow Iberian rival, an emerging modern Spain, became fully committed to the search for new trade routes overseas. In 1492, the Spanish conquered the Moorish Kingdom of Granada, which had been providing it with African goods through tribute. In the hope of bypassing Portugal's monopoly on West African sea routes, a newly united Spain decided to fund a daring expedition to reach southeastern Asia by traveling west. Although King John of Portugal refused to help Christopher Columbus, some of the earliest European explorers to reach continental North America in the Age of Discovery were Portuguese explorers. Numerous place names attest to the fact that Portuguese fished for cod on the Grand Banks. Labrador, likely from the Portuguese lavrador, meaning small landowner or farmer, indicates that the Portuguese knew of this territory. Only a handful of Portuguese fishermen, however, settled on the Canadian Atlantic coast. The Portuguese in New France were descended from a few families founded by immigrants who arrived in 1668 and later. Portuguese explorers were thus among the first Europeans to lay eyes on what is now Canadian soil. Today, 500,000 Canadians are of Portuguese origin, and 45% of that number have Portuguese as their mother tongue language. Bilateral ties between Portugal and the United States date from the earliest years of the Republic. Following the American Revolutionary War, Portugal was the first neutral country to recognize the nascent USA. In the late 19th century, many Portuguese immigrated to New England, establishing communities and coastal cities. Later, Portuguese farming communities were founded on the west coast of the continent. The Portuguese arrived in Mexico during the Spanish colonial period. Many of them were sailors, conquistadors, clergy, and members of the military. Later Portuguese arrivals included pirates in conflict with Spanish leadership. Today, the country's largest Portuguese community is concentrated in Mexico City. Over the years, Portuguese have immigrated to North America for the same reasons as many other population groups, including economic opportunity, underemployment in their countries of origin, and a desire to escape political oppression. Portuguese arrivals on the continent peaked after World War II. Along with their few belongings, hopes, dreams, and determination, they brought their unique culture, including fado music. Fado, spelled F-A-D-O, is a type of folk music characterized by mournful tunes and lyrics, often about the sea or the life of the poor and the dispossessed. Its origins are obscure, but most aficionados agree that it was originally the song of the underprivileged, passing then into street singing and disreputable cafe society, and thence into musical revues, legitimate theater, and on into movies and international concert tours. The style most likely originated in the 1820s in Portugal, which is known in the world music scene for its traditions of fado, which means fate in Portuguese. Within Portugal, regional folk music remains popular, having been updated and modernized in many cases. Fado music has undergone numerous mutations since the 1950s in the three Portuguese cities where fado has developed: Lisbon, Coimbra, and Porto. Fado arose in the capital city of Lisbon as the music of the urban poor. It emerged from the singing of the Portuguese sailors and also was derived from Brazilian music styles. The earliest mention of the Portuguese term for fado singer, fadista, is in 1849. Fado songs are typically lyrically harsh, with the singer resigned to poverty, sadness, and loneliness, but remaining dignified and firmly controlled. A crucial concept and essential ingredient in Portuguese music is saudade, which can be most closely translated as yearning for the unattainable, with the resultant discouragement and resignation. Saudade is said to be requisite for fado musicians, as it powers their performances and causes frenzied crowd reactions. The city of Coimbra, a district and city located in the central part of Portugal, 75 miles south of Porto and 120 miles, or almost 200 kilometers north of Lisbon, developed a distinctive and highly stylized fado scene in the late 19th century, rooted in melancholic traditional Portuguese folk songs, religious hymns, and Brazilian melodies brought to the country by Brazilian students who studied at Coimbra University, one of the oldest universities in Europe. This sentimental, colorfully poetic style of fado also featured the newly popular Portuguese guitar. Student fado, performed by the students, has maintained a tradition since it was pioneered in the 1890s by Augusto Hilario. In the 1920s and 30s, a series of Fado de Coimbra recordings were very popular. Guitarists Carlos Paredes and his father Artur were the great pioneers of this guitarradas style. Starting in 1939 with the career of Amalia Rodriguez, fado was an internationally popular genre. A singer and film actor, Rodriguez made numerous stylistic innovations that have made her one of the most influential fadista of all time. José Afonso, a rival in terms of influence, began performing in the 1950s. Afonso was a popular roots-based musician that led the Portuguese roots revival. Though fado eventually declined in popularity from its peak during the early part of the 20th century, it has since enjoyed nostalgic revivals in the 1950s and 70s and remains popular to this day with the tourists visiting active fado houses in Portugal and on tour in concert halls throughout America.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Now, let's take a break from our regular historical narrative to highlight a few movies, series, programs, documentaries, and books that showcase American history and refer to topics covered so far in this series. A previous episode introduced us to the warrior Pope Julius II, who played a role in the treaty that divided the world, including North America. The Agony and the Ecstasy is a 1965 American film directed by Carol Reed and starring Rex Harrison as Pope Julius, and Charlton Heston as the Italian artist Michelangelo. The film was partly based on Irving Stone's 1961 biographical novel. This film deals with the conflicts of Michelangelo and Pope Julius during the painting of the Sistine Chapel ceiling and is highly recommended for all history and art lovers. In previous episodes, I introduced the founder of the Tudors dynasty, King Henry VII, father of the infamous monarch Henry VIII, and grandfather to Gloriana, the Virgin Queen Elizabeth. The Tudors is a must-see historical fiction television series set in 16th century England. Time is compressed in the series, and many events differ from what actually happened in history. But for pure entertainment and spectacle, this drama delivers on multiple levels. For other Tudor representations on screen, check out the excellent 1960s movie Anne of the Thousand Days, starring Canadian actress Genevieve Bugeaud and film icon Richard Burton as King Henry VIII. Also, Cate Blanchett successfully took on the role of Queen Elizabeth in two sumptuous major motion pictures, 1998's Elizabeth and 2007's Elizabeth the Golden Age. A previous episode discussed the fall of Constantinople in 1453 to the attacking Ottoman army. Ottoman: Rise of Empires is a six-part docudrama series that has historians directly commenting on events as they unfold. The imagery and special effects are impressive, but caution, the battle scenes are very graphic. The series uses correct timeline and description of the attack from both the Byzantine and Ottoman perspectives, but at times, the show does depict events that cannot be historically confirmed. By the way, when surfing the net during my post-viewing research, fact-checking, and analysis, I stumbled onto the classic pop tune, Istanbul, Not Constantinople, by the Four Lads. This old-school recording brought a smile to my face. Music lovers should give it a listen. We all know that entertainment programs often get the history wrong. Don't let that bother or discourage you. Stay positive, and instead, see this as an opportunity to apply my two sources rule described in a previous episode to check the historical veracity of any kind of entertainment program that connects with the past. As mentioned, it's well worth the effort and can be intellectually stimulating, satisfying, and may lead to critical thinking and analysis while being an interesting, eye-opening, and productive exercise. Remember, fact-checking can be fun and something any parent, grandparent, or guardian can do with kids. Never shy away, ignore, or shun an opportunity to learn history and sharpen your mind. The Dig is a 2021 British drama film based on the 2007 novel of the same name by John Preston, which reimagines the true events of the 1939 excavation of the large burial mounds at Sutton Hoo. It stars Carey Mulligan, Ralph Fiennes, and Lily James. As World War II approaches, a large team of excavators and archaeologists uncover proof that the mounds are Anglo-Saxon in origin rather than the more common Viking era that we visited in previous episodes of this series. This movie features beautifully matched performances made with subtlety and sensitivity, set against gorgeously filmed English countryside. The Dig follows a slow and understated pace as it yields period drama treasures and lush cinematography. I mentioned the Crusades in a previous episode. Kingdom of Heaven is a 2005 epic historical drama film from Ridley Scott, the director of Gladiator, and stars Orlando Bloom, Jeremy Irons, Liam Neeson, and Eva Green. Muslim military leader and conqueror Saladin is featured in this fascinating but complex period of history that opened up Europe to the Orient and began an exchange of ideas that would eventually lead to the Age of Exploration. This big-budget flick, however, betrays its true intentions when tainting its historical components by embracing political correctness and endowing 21st-century morals on 12th-century characters. Saladin and the Great Crusades is a 1963 Egyptian war drama film which depicts the events of the Third Crusade as King Richard of England, Emperor Barbarossa of Germany, and King Philip Augustus of France joined together to reclaim Jerusalem and return it to Christian hands from Muslim Sultan Saladin. This movie offers an unusual take on this contentious period in history. Into the Rising Sun is an interesting documentary about the Portuguese age of exploration and bookends our deep dive into the Treaty of Tordesillas in previous episodes, as well as our episodes featuring Portuguese North Americans and Portuguese fado music. East of Mexico and south of Florida, the islands of the Caribbean were introduced in a previous episode, the 2008 television action series Crusoe, and the 1954 Mexican adventure film, The Adventures of Robinson Crusoe, are both based on the 1719 book by Daniel Defoe, which is claimed to be second only to the Bible in its number of translations. Generally seen as a contender for the first English novel, this story of fiction is presented as an autobiography of the title character, a castaway who spends 28 years on a remote tropical desert island near the coast of Trinidad before ultimately being rescued. Trinidad is the larger and more populous of the two major islands of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. It is the southernmost island in the West Indies and was visited by Christopher Columbus on his third voyage in 1498. Only a few Europeans actually reached the Orient by land and brought back to Europe tales of Asia's wonders. One such man was Venetian-born Marco Polo, who traveled with his merchant father and uncle to Cathay, or China, during the second half of the 13th century. In Peking, known today as Beijing, he spent many years experiencing Oriental life as a guest of, and later, a diplomat for the Emperor Kublai Khan, grandson of the celebrated Mongol conqueror Genghis Khan. Upon his return, Polo took part in a city-state war between his native city and Genoa, in the course of which he was taken prisoner. During his confinement, he dictated in French to a fellow prisoner the story of his travels, which was published and became perhaps the most celebrated and influential travel book in history. With a wealth of vivid detail, it gave to medieval Europe its first consequential knowledge of China and information concerning other 13th century Asiatic countries, including Japan, Siam, Java, China, Ceylon, Tibet, India, and Burma. For centuries, it was the only existing source in Europe for information on the geography and life of the Far East. The book became the basis for some of the first accurate maps of Asia made in Europe and helped arouse in navigator Christopher Columbus an interest in the Orient, which culminated in his voyages to America, while attempting to reach the far east of Polo's description by sailing due west from Europe. When I covered the European Age of Exploration in a previous episode, I mentioned this titan of history, whose incredible life has often been the subject of movies, TV shows, books, and kid games. Marco Polo, a 2014 TV program starring Benedict Wong as Kublai Khan, is a series of historical fiction based on the accounts of the Italian merchant, explorer, and writer who traveled through Asia along the Silk Road between 1271 and 1295. The Venetians' adventures are recorded in The Travels of Marco Polo, a book that described to Europeans the then mysterious culture and inner workings of the Eastern world, including the wealth and great size of the Mongol Empire, giving their first comprehensive look into China, Persia, India, Japan, and other Asian cities and countries. For you classic movie buffs, worlds collide in The Adventures of Marco Polo, a 1938 black-and-white film starring Gary Cooper. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the story. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, Take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.